Radio Prague News.
President Miloš Zeman says China will retaliate against security warnings issued by Czech authorities. Czech diplomats are working with Italian authorities to block the misuse of Jan Palach's name at an upcoming neo-Nazi concert in Verona. And the newly reopened National Museum in Prague will be closed for the month of February. President Miloš Zeman says China will retaliate against security warnings issued by the Czech authorities concerning the use of Huawei technology. In a TV interview, he said some government members had information to that effect, although the country's prime minister has denied any knowledge of it. Mr. Zeman said investments by carmaker Škoda Auto are at risk, as is an agreement between Czech company PPF and Huawei to create a 5G network in the Czech Republic, among other things. Czech diplomats have met authorities from the Italian city of Verona to try to block the misappropriation of Jan Palach's name at a far-right concert there this next week, which marks the 50th anniversary of his death. Jan Palach died in January 1969, several days after having set himself alight to protest Czech apathy in the face of Soviet occupation. The Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs announced on Friday via Twitter that the embassy in Rome is in contact with Verona provincial officials to, quote, try to prevent the misuse of the name of Jan Palach in an unacceptable context. Students at Charles University in Prague, where he studied, earlier launched an online petition in this regard. The National Museum in Prague, which reopened to the public with great fanfare on October 28th after having undergone a years-long complex renovation, will be closed for the month of February. Museum Director Michal Lukács told the Echo 24 Daily that it is quite common in such circumstances to have a trial opening period followed by a temporary closure. The museum was reopened on the 100th anniversary of the founding of Czechoslovakia for symbolic purposes. But the final restoration is not complete, he said. Certain technical procedures must also be tested in the presence of firefighters and other safety experts. The Ministry of Education will back a proposal by the teachers' unions to raise the average salary of teachers by the end of 2021 to almost 50,000 crowns. That's roughly a 34% increase from current levels and about 5,000 crowns more than the coalition government has committed to so far. To reach that figure, the unions expect a 15% increase this year and in 2020, followed by a 10% increase in 2021. The Czech economy grew 2.4% year-on-year in the third quarter of 2018 and by 0.6% in quarterly terms, this according to the Czech Statistical Office. Per capita income rose 2.8% in annual terms during that quarter, when the average monthly salary reached nearly 27,000 crowns. Meanwhile, Czech retail sales, excluding cars and motorcycles, rose by 6.1% year-on-year in November, which is about 1.5 percentage points above the market consensus. Household consumption remains the main driver of the domestic economy, according to analysts. Prague's mayor, Zdeněk Šib of the Pirate Party, has told Prime Minister Andrej Babiš that the capital's leaders are opposed to the latter's idea of creating a special government district in the Letnany area. At a meeting with Mr. Babiš, representatives of City Hall also discussed government help in acquiring land for the Prague Ring Road, as well as a better connection to Václav Havel International Airport. And finally, the weather. Freezing rain or light snowfall is likely throughout most of the country on Saturday. Daytime temperatures should range between minus 1 and 3 degrees Celsius. Meanwhile, many towns in the mountains are struggling to clear roads due to heavy snowfall in recent days. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up in today's program, the president says that identifying Huawei as a security risk will harm Czech companies in China, business leaders are pressuring the government to ease quota on foreign workers, and later we speak to Pavla Niklova, head of the Václav Havel Library Foundation in New York. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The president has lashed out at Czech security agencies that have identified Chinese-made Huawei products as a threat. Miloš Zeman says this has harmed the Czech Republic's economic interests, and payback from Beijing will hit some of the country's biggest companies. Ian Willoughby reports.
In December, the National Cyber and Security Information Agency issued a security alert in connection with Huawei products. Soon afterwards, the Prime Minister, Andrei Babiš, ordered the Office of the Government to cease using mobile phones produced by the Chinese firm. Earlier this week, Mr. Babiš instructed many of the country's key public and private organizations to look into whether using products made by Huawei or a second Chinese company, ZTE, didn't leave them open to attack. Now, President Miloš Zeman, who has fostered close relations with Beijing in recent years, has entered the fray. In an interview on TV Barrandov, he accused the directors of the cyber watchdog agency and the BIS counterintelligence service by name of seriously endangering Czech economic interests. This they had done, he said, without offering any proof of a threat.
According to information that some ministers possess and others do not, China is preparing retaliatory measures in the wake of this campaign against the company Huawei, and these will be felt in several areas.
Specifically, Mr. Zeman said this would affect carmaker Škoda Auto, which had agreed major investment deals in China, and O2 owner PPF's planned collaboration with Huawei on rolling out a 5G network here in the Czech Republic. Speaking on Friday, Prime Minister Babiš played down suggestions his cabinet was expecting Chinese retaliation, but he appeared to back the president on the issue of evidence.
One minister told us he had a meeting from which it could follow that in theory there could be a problem, but we didn't get any official statement. The National Cyber and Security Information Service issued a warning before informing us about it. Unfortunately, they didn't provide any proof for their claims.
Meanwhile, critics have accused Mr. Zeman of undermining the country's intelligence services. Among them is Senate Speaker Jaroslav Kubera of the Civic Democrats.
I said this before when the president cast doubt on the work of the secret services. This just isn't done. These things are unnecessary, but it's not just the president. It's a problem of the whole of society. Such scandals are damaging.
Meanwhile, TOPO 9 leader Jiří Pospíšil has accused Mr. Zeman of acting as if he himself were the Chinese ambassador or a Chinese trade representative. Other opposition figures say it's not the first time the Czech head of state has employed the possible loss of business with the world's most populous state as a threat.
And that was Ian Willoughby with that report. Foreigners now account for nearly 11% of the Czech workforce, despite making up just 5% of the population. In light of an ongoing labour shortage, business leaders are now urging the government to make it easier for non-nationals to work in the country. That economic migrants are currently highly beneficial to the Czech economy is shown in data recently released by the Czech Statistical Office. The organisation's director for labour market and equal opportunities statistics, Dalibor Holý, explains.
10.7% of all employees in the country are foreign nationals. When we take into consideration that they make up roughly 5% of the population, this is a great imbalance. We can see these are mainly foreigners of working age.
At the beginning of 2018, there were around 200,000 more foreign workers than before the global financial crisis hit the country in 2008. Mr. Holly offered more details on the latest statistics.
When talking about foreigners on the Czech labour market, people tend to imagine them as a monolithic mass. That isn't true. Those from states such as Slovakia or Romania stand out for being very young. Others, such as Bulgarians and Ukrainians, have the same age structure as Czechs. Each nationality has its specifics.
There is a strong influx of highly qualified workers from Eastern Europe. Meanwhile, Slovaks and Romanians make up much of the middle-ranking workforce, with the latter often working in areas such as communications. With unemployment levels currently at their lowest for over 20 years, businesses are facing an acute labour shortage. Both the Confederation of Industry and the Chamber of Commerce are now appealing to raise quotas for qualified workers from countries outside the EU. Furthermore, business leaders are also urging the list of countries from which the labour force can be drawn is extended. Speaking to Czech Radio, the Minister of Industry and Trade, Marta Novákova, said that the government was doing its best to attract highly qualified workers from abroad.
We've also proposed an amendment to the foreign residency law in Parliament, which includes a special working visa. This would allow us to attract the best brains. At the same time, we should also think hard about how we can ensure our intelligent workforce remains in this country.
Unqualified labour is in even higher demand, however. December statistics show that employers were mainly searching for builders, cleaners and lorry drivers. Trade unions, meanwhile, are not against the influx of foreign workers. However, they insist foreign nationals should not work for lower salaries and in worse conditions than Czech citizens. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day. Now, the Václav Havel Library Foundation in New York promotes the legacy of the late Czech president in North America. The foundation is headed by Pavla Niklová, and she is Ian Willoughby's guest now in this edition of One on One.
The Václav Havel Library in Prague follows the U.S. presidential library model in gathering and archiving materials relating to the late Czech dissident turned head of state. In the U.S., Havel's legacy is promoted by sister organization the Václav Havel Library Foundation, which is based at the Bohemian National Hall in New York. The latter is headed by Pavla Niklová, a former director of the city's Czech Center. When we met, Niklová explained the relationship between the foundation and the library itself.
The relationship is very close. People from the library are on our board and vice versa. We share our archival material. We promote their archive on our website, and we are trying to add some things from America. Of course, Havel Library is the main institution that covers Václav Havel. They have incredible archive, they keep all the materials, they prepare incredible number of high quality live events. I read somewhere that they are the number one non-profit in the Czech Republic in terms of influence that they have, definitely in the sphere of human rights and other areas. And so we are their little brother, little sister, and trying to work on some things together and trying to promote Havel's legacy here in North America.
When you speak about the archive, what kind of materials are you gathering here in the States related to Václav Havel?
It's more of a sharing materials online. So we have established partnerships with several presidential libraries and universities and media, and we share their information about Václav Havel on our website. So the idea is basically that if people try to look for information on Havel, they may get, well, of course, either to the website of Havel Library directly, or if they get to our website, they can read some extra articles about Havel, and then there's a link for Prague Archive.
And I guess you guys have more stuff in English?
Yes, we have only stuff in English.
And are you, like, gathering all newspaper interviews, that kind of stuff, or books? What exactly is it?
Everything is only online. We don't have a physical archive here. I mean, we do have, like, one little bookshelf that is dedicated to Václav Havel, but our aim is not to really build up a substantial physical archive here.
And do you have any interesting ongoing projects?
There are a few of them. Maybe I would start with the theater. One of them is a fellowship for theater students from Prague Theater Academy, from DAMU. The project works the way that every year DAMU announces a contest for students to write a mini drama based of one of Havel's plays or themes or quotes. And then their jury selects one student who then comes to New York. Of course, the other big theater project is the festival Rehearsal for Truth. It's a showcase of Central European theater, but it's also possible that next year we will enlarge it and that the focus doesn't have to be only Central European. I would like to collaborate with the French because they have another festival at the same time, so I hope for some more work there. And another like annual project is our award for a courageous writer at risk called Disturbing the Peace. Another big project that we launched is called Havel Conversations. And these are interviews with important Americans in fields of politics, culture, academia. Initial 10 interviews, we got a very nice grant from Carnegie Corporation, and we prepared interviews with Madeleine Albright, Bill Clinton, Henry Kissinger, Susan Vega, six more people.
And were these like live interviews on stage that people could attend, or were they more private?
Those first 10 interviews were private, but the purpose of them is to be used. They should be used by students, politicians, human rights activists. They are housed at Florida International University, and this summer they became a part of Digital Public America Library platform, which is very important for us. We are very proud of it because basically it means that these interviews became part of American cultural heritage. But we also have started some Havel Conversations live, and the first two that we did were with Gail Papp and Carol Rocamora, and the second one was with Wendy Lourdes.
Generally speaking, what's your sense of how Havel is perceived today in America?
I think he's very much admired. I've been told many times that, for example, in the United Nations, he's been quoted together with Gandhi and Mandela as like the three human rights heroes of the 20th century. Of course, so many things are happening around the world. You know, what happened yesterday is already old news. So that's our task and responsibility to remind people of his ideas and to promote them because they are very much valid.
I was reading something written by the head of the Václav Havel Library in Prague, Michal Žantovský, and he was saying that in the last few years they have been experiencing something new, which is that the young people that the Havel Library in Prague is seeking to engage with don't really know who Havel was, and they don't even know what communism was. These are young Czechs.
Yeah, that's frightening. Of course, the United States is a huge country, but 2 years ago for Havel at 80, we prepared one fellowship called Fellowship for Human Rights for students, and we advertised it through a special network at many American universities. Again, the task was to write an essay based on the power of the powerless and basically to write what is valid for today's world, and we received something like 50, 60 essays from different universities, really from all parts of the United States. So I think that in one way, of course, the United States, there are so many people, it's a huge country, many people don't know that the Czech Republic exists or Václav Havel lived, maybe they know Jager or Martina Navrátilová. But on the other hand, I would say that there is a solid number of students who are definitely interested in his writings and feel it's very important for their studies and for understanding what was going on in the 20th century in the eastern part of Europe.
Do you think his story is relatively easy to comprehend for American students? Because he was a playwright who became a politician, he didn't really have any scandals, he didn't do anything really wrong, I guess, from many people's perspective.
I think they are still excited to find out that something like that is possible. I think he is a hero and like a model that people admire.
Did you know Havel?
I knew him. I met him a few times, but I can't say we were friends. First, I met him when I worked at the Soros Center in Prague, and He asked us to prepare exhibition for the hospital in Střešovice, where he was hospitalized, and he said there was nothing on the walls. So we prepared exhibition of contemporary artists in there. So that was the first time I met him. And last time he was sitting behind me at the Arca Theater when his last play Leaving was on, and he was laughing and he was kicking me, you know, on my back because he was right behind me. So it was the last time. And he wanted to come when I was here at the Czech Center, and we were showing Citizen Havel, the documentary, and he was supposed to come. Unfortunately, the morning they called me and they said that Michael Douglas was throwing a party and so that Havel was going there. So I tried to suggest them, so bring Michael Douglas and come. And they told me, okay, but that dinner is for 50 people or 150 people or something. So it didn't happen. So I was sorry and he was sorry because he didn't see the Bohemian National Hall. He was here when it was still under reconstruction, and I know he was looking forward to seeing it, what it looked like when it was reopened, and that unfortunately didn't happen.
When you were around him, what impression did he make on you at the personal level?
Very nice, and something that in Czech I say normal. He just behaved in a normal way. I didn't feel any pretentious. He wasn't snobbish. He enjoyed talking to people. He was ready to react quickly to changing situations. So it was a pure pleasure to be around him.
Also, I guess he was a great admirer of America. Would you say that's a fair comment?
Yes, I think so. I think he, in a way, idealized it a little bit. But he came here for the first time in spring of 1968 when his play, The Memorandum, had a premiere at the Public Theater. Of course, it was a revolutionary time, and he spent around a month here. And he met with many writers and intellectuals and people like George Voskovec, who lived here, so Czech people who lived here. And I think it was very important for the following years when then he could not travel, but he managed during that time already established some friendships that helped him to get through those 20 years.
And that was Pavla Niklová, director of the Václav Havel Library Foundation in New York, who was speaking there to Ian Willoughby. Ian did lots more interviews when he was in the Big Apple in the autumn, and many are now available on Radio Prague's website. Many will also be broadcast in the coming weeks and months. If you have any comments about today's program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Tom McEncrow. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.